I'll admit, we all look at these problems as much as we should. We tend to think that the assembly of that thing, whatever it is, piece of furniture, piece of appliance, it starts with us, doesn't it? That last initial moment of coming together, it starts when we dump the pieces out of the box onto the counter and we see the screws, the nuts, and those plastic pieces that we don't know what they're for. You think that's when the production starts. But what we so often don't realize is that the products coming together has already begun. Before we open the box, it began with someone who's good enough to write out the instructions for how not to put it together. Now it is true that there are some instructions that aren't very good instructions. The cheaper the product, the worse the instructions are probably going to be. But if they're good instructions, then we would often do well to recognize that somebody has begun the process for us on a piece of paper. And we should probably recognize that fact. The fact is that there's a plan for how these things are supposed to be put together, how they're supposed to come together so that they work right and the product can be everything that it's supposed to be. But too often, we march ahead without recognizing that somebody has begun that process before us. Isn't it funny that the only thing that doesn't fall into the box, guys, is the instructions? And how often have we had to start over? Or, let me even take it back. As long as it didn't work right. You know that it would work for you. How embarrassed have you been? Because she told you that he made you look at instructions. Or worse, you've actually watched something maybe get burned. Because you put it together wrong. You didn't follow the instructions. Well, you know what God has got a plan to do. We all know that, though, don't we? I mean, sitting here in this church tonight, we know that God has a plan. We know that his plan has been working out from the beginning and he's going to work that plan out at the end. Most of us in here, people go on day 28, and we know that all things work together for the good of those who love God. We know that verse by heart. Just like we know that somebody manufactured that thing that we bought with a plan. Just like we know that all of its parts work together for the good of those who bought, right? But still, even though we know that someone else has designed it, part of the whole thing materializing and coming together involves us. It involves you and me putting it together. And that's the same with what God is doing. God is building a people for himself. He is the one who is advancing his kingdom. We know that he's the architect. We know that he's the one who's ultimately responsible for the finished product. But we also know that he uses us to make it happen. What we often fail to realize is that even in the mundane tasks of our lives, plan that he's given us, to the work that he's already begun. So when it comes to things like how we take our breaks at work, how we interact with people on the phone, yes, even telemarketers, maybe how we help our neighbors with their lawn or with their garden or maybe with dinners if we need. When it comes to how we make our purchases, when it comes to what our purchases tell other people about us and our priority, what our purchases tell God. When it comes to who it is that we choose to befriend, to spend time with. When it comes to what our children see us spend time with, what our children see us read, or what our children see us watch, or how we spend our time with them. And all of these, God uses us, and he uses us to advance his kingdom, to build that thing that he is putting together with his direction that he's planned out. And we need to be mindful of that. We need to be mindful of God's plan. Be mindful of God's plan. Because if we aren't aren't mindful of God's plan, you come into harm. So be, let's be mindful of God's plan and avoid the harm of not being proper servants. Now, how many men have paid the price because you haven't been mindful of following the plan? Well, tonight I'm going to be one of those guys. Actually, last Sunday morning when I preached, we first met there, I didn't make it after we first meet Adam. Look at the Bible, Ephesians chapter 2, verse 8. Read along with me. You don't have to do it. But this is how I'll read it. That's all. It says, Abner, son of Ner, commander of Saul's army, took Saul's son, Mephibosheth, and moved him to Machanaim. He made him king over Gilead, shared with Judah, Ephraim, Benjamin, over all Israel. Before I move on here, I want to tell you turning this sermon, this is one of these sermons that I say to my wife. I hope people don't call this because it is largely through a lot of stories. In order to understand it, we've got to understand. So this is one of those, one, yes, it's Sunday night, and one of the beautiful looks like that. And then after this, what I'm thinking about, trying to read a story with people, et cetera, and really break off of something. You've got to understand it. Okay? And if there's part of you that wants to apologize for that, but there's another question. So, we meet Abner. Abner was the brother of the old King Saul, right? Who God had removed from being king because he was a treacherous old king. He was a terrible, terrible fellow. We've seen that over and over again as we've been working our way through this book of Samuel. But Abner had his personal motivations. He wanted to keep this crown inside Israel. He wanted to keep it specifically inside the family line. So after God had removed Saul, and God was now ready to set up another king over his people, Abner makes his own move. He sets to work on assembling God's kingdom, but assembling God's kingdom in his own way, according to his own plan. He takes King Saul's remaining son, whose name is Mephibosheth, terrible name, it means man of shame, that's common, and he takes Mephibosheth and he makes him king over Israel, over God's people. Now the problem with this plan is that God already has a plan. It's not the one that Abner doesn't consider at all. God's plan was to take this young fellow, we all know him here, David, to be the next king over God's people. David was God's choice because David was a faithful man. David was a man after God's own heart. He sought God's will out. But at this stage of the game, David was working for the Philistines, who were the enemy of God's people. So like I said, we come to this text, it's easy to quickly read through it, think you understand, but it's actually kind of a complicated historical study. And so if you don't want to mystify the text. In a nutshell, here's what's going on. David was the next in line to be King Saul knew. So he chased David all over Israel trying to kill him. David, he just wanted to keep serving Saul. He had a pure heart of the whole thing. But finally, David got so afraid of Saul, he said, I have hope that he's left. Oh, where do I go now? So he went to the Philistines. They were the only ones who accepted him. But they're also Israel's worst enemy. So David goes, he lives with the Philistines. He goes to war with them sometimes. He pretends that he's loyal to them. However, all of the time, through the whole thing, David's using Philistine funds to fight Israel's enemy. And the Philistines think that David's fighting to be more worth for the Philistines. David's not. Finally, King Saul dies. He's out of the way. He's killed by the Philistines, actually. The Philistines move in, and they take this huge portion of land, Judah. And they take it. It's now Philistine territory. Israel's broken up a little bit. And they say, well, David, he's Jewish. He knows his territory. Let's let him kind of look after it for us. We'll put David in Judah, and he'll guard this place for us. That's the Philistine system. When David moves into the land, Judah, these Israelites in Judah know that he's supposed to be the next king. So they come out, and they anoint him as king of Judah. Philistines aren't aware that this is going on. They think he's just the protector of that portion of the land. Abner sees David is working for the Philistines. He comes out and he sets up his nephew, King Saul's son, as the new
Abner looks back and he calls back and he says, Asael, is that you, Asael? I said,
be over. He's soon not killing him one day. But as he said, I saw all he is like a missile, he is steady. There's nothing that's going to stop him. Well, it's too bad. Then for Asael, then he's not going to play because he was running because what we see is after being good on the prophecy, Asael doesn't run off. But after that, he wants to have to kill him. So he hits him in the back of his spear and ends up running away from him. Asael falls down and he dies. It's at this point we see all the truth come to a halt and he's very much included, not in his fight. They don't say, let's get him. Let's get him. Joab said, let's keep going. It was tough for him. Joab really got into that. Because Asael was his brother. And they chased him. They just hold on until he was going to go to the sun. And finally, after he stops his troops, he gathers them around, ready for battle. He's got no choice but to praise Joab for the rest of the years. He cried, he looked at him, one last time, he cried. He says, Joab, must the sword devour forever? Don't you realize this is only the man that there's no wrong? Before you know the truth, stop pursuing their brother. Interesting, the words of Abner. Remember, Abner is the one who started this. He's the one who initially marched with him. He's the one who suggested, let's let these warriors kill each other in front of us to see who's going to win. And now what's his cry? Oh, please stop. He didn't have any concern with his brothers in the beginning. But now the things are going so quickly that he begged him to stop fighting. Well, in verses 27 to 28, the whole scene comes to an end. Joab finally agrees to come to the prophet. Joab falls off in pursuit. But it's important for us to remember at this point for the rest, the next couple of chapters, that Abner is now holding the door closed. He started these hostilities between David and his men. And this is all behind David. And now, after Abner was so ambitious to go ahead and expand Israel's kingdom, but wasn't mindful of the fact that God maybe had another plan that he was moving forward with. After he went ahead without considering God's direction, you see, he goes back to Israel. His legs. He suffered embarrassment in front of everyone. He's placed himself on himself the grudge of Joab, which is never going to leave him for the rest of his life. He's been the cause of the death of hundreds of men who were bold and ambitious that would be mindful of God's direction. Verse 31 tells us that his plans occupied 360 men. Slaughtered by their own brothers. What? Nothing was accomplished. He was slaughtered by his own. All because of one man, not mine, the plan of God. That's what we need to remember. God has a plan. He has a way that he wants things constructed and put together. And like Abner, we need to be mindful of that plan. If we're not going to be able to come to the Lord's plan, we're not going to be able to put our plan. You know, in every piece of courage that's sold today, you're a bad actor, you probably know this, that when one long screw becomes of every piece of courage that makes a screw that almost never gets used. I know that in times past, I only said, oh, but it's the screw that fixes your piece of furniture to the wall. But you don't need to look too far online to find out that this screw is probably the most important screw of all of the screws. Because the internet is littered with stories of dressers and cabinets falling over on children who try to climb off them. Some of the stories are really sad. Children die after several minutes of laying underneath cabinets. Sometimes some of them are really heavy, struggling to get out, and the pressure is just too much to kill them. They got into this asphyxiation. It didn't take too many of reading these stories before I was running around the house throwing everything to the wall that was in our house. We got to my wife. We took about a whole day out of this. every part of God's plan. Because if you are not, others can suffer. Others can suffer. We see this going. We didn't have this example. He wanted to advance Israel. Don't get me wrong with that. But because he was so bent on doing these things without considering that God had installed David as king, that God was going to use someone else to advance Israel, people got hurt. In fact, people got killed. A lot of people. You know, when we follow our own plan, we don't consider this consequence. When we don't take time to be mindful of God's will, if we think there may be any consequences at all, it's probably only something that's going to come back and bite us, or harm us, right? We don't just come back and bite us. It's why, as parents, we bear a heavy responsibility, because our children can be hurt. They can be damaged. They can be damaged emotionally. They can be damaged, more importantly, they can be damaged spiritually. It's why, as older Christians, we need to understand that God's directions sometimes do take us. They take us, they can even take the whole church in a new direction that's different from just, oh, that's the way that we've always done things. In other words, don't get too attached to those traditions. We shouldn't. If we aren't open to that, if we're not mindful of that, others can get hurt. We can stifle what God is trying to do. As teachers, as leaders, we need to be mindful of what God is doing. Keep a keen eye out for that. And where God is doing it. And those who we mentioned this morning are called to disciple others. We need to be mindful of how God is working. God is doing it. I don't know if after having time to realize what we did, what we think about it now before we make those mistakes. There's a lot of things. How many families have been ripped apart because of innocent learning that started at the office, maybe? Or maybe it started online. How many children have suffered because their mom and dad just fight with each other? And then they grow up and fight with their spouses. And then their children see that the cycle just continues and continues. How many people have been impacted by pornography? If you're into that, you think, oh, it's just the viewer who's affected. But no, what about the girls who are being exploited, or the children who are being exploited? The wives who suffer isolation, or affecting parents when the sin becomes exposed. There was a guy I met just a couple weeks ago, an older gentleman, who he's lived in a community his whole life, he had to move, he and his old wife had to move out of the community because their son was in charge. You could have that son never envisioned that this would be the kind of thing that ever would happen. And he started clicking that mouse button. How many people in the church are deeply hurt? How many? How is the body divided? Because one person, we can start with one person, gossips or can't let go of a grudge. So the whole church becomes fragmented into these little blocks. After sin, after plan, cost lives of hundreds. See, not being mindful of God's plan can result in the injury of so many. Even pit, as we see in our text, even pit brother against brother, sister against sister. There's a good chance that you've seen this happen in your life. There's a good chance that at times maybe you've been the cause of this kind. There are not made the same thing. Be mindful of God's plan so we can keep others from suffering. Secondly, we need to be mindful of God's plan so that we don't suffer ourselves. Yes. I remember one evening, I was coming out of the church, I was going over to my car, and I saw a lady leaving the church and heard the car. So I walked over and and she left the lights on the car. So I pull up my car. I got up and jumped the cable drivers and then passed. And another man pulled up, just then, and got out of the problem. Immediately the cable drove my hand and reversed the car we had in the cable. And said, I'm going to get that car. I want to get that car. So, no, this is how it's supposed to go. How can you make the car? So that's how it's supposed to go. But you're so forceful. I just got the phone and pushed soon as I realized that my own instincts weren't in the wild, they were in the public, they were in the church, not only in that home, not just because I didn't have that safety to go to my neighbor. Celestial city, the kingdom of heaven, after this life.
Thank you.